Pashun Pasha Twayadvare Samgya Pitan Jiva Sangham Nigrinena Sahasrashaha Naruvacha Bobo Prajapate Rajan Pashun Pasha Twayadvare Samgya Pitan Jiva Sangham Nigrinena Sahasrashaha. Bobo Prajapate Rajan Shatun Pashadwara Dore Gapita Jiva Sangan Vena Sahasrashaha Naruvacha Bobo Prajapate Rajan Tumpasha Dwayadare Gapita Jiva Sangan Negrinena Sahasrashaha. Ladies, Naruvacha Prajapate Rajan Pashun Pasha Dwayadare Kamgya Pitan Jiva Sangan Negrinena Sahasrashaha Naruvacha Bobo Prajapate Rajan Sampachan Prajapate Kamgya Pitan Jiva Sangan Yagrinena Sahasrashaha Naruvacha. The great sage Narada replied, Bobo, hello. Prajapate, O ruler of the citizens. Rajan, O king. Pashun, animals. Pasha, please see. Twaya, by you. Advare, in the sacrifice. Samgya Pitam, killed. Jiva Sanghan, groups of animals. Nigrinena, without pity. Sahasrashaha, in thousands. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The great saint Narada said, O ruler of the citizens. Let me read the... everyone's very anxious to repeat the verse. My dear king, please see in the sky those animals which you have sacrificed without compassion and without mercy in the sacrificial arena. Please repeat. The great saint Narada said, O ruler of the citizens, my dear king, please see in the sky those animals which you have sacrificed without compassion and without mercy in the sacrificial arena. So what did I just read? Yeah, what did it say? You know, it's pretty good. Without mercy and without compassion, yes. Fourth point. Because animal sacrifices recommended in the Vedas, there are animal sacrifices in almost all religious rituals. However, one should not be satisfied simply by killing animals according to the directions of the scriptures. One should transcend the ritualistic ceremonies and try to understand the actual truth, the purpose of life. Narada Muni wanted to instruct the king about the real purpose of life and evoke a spirit of renunciation in his heart. Knowledge and the spirit of renunciation, jnana vairagya, are the ultimate goal of life. Without knowledge, one cannot become detached from material enjoyment, and without being detached from material enjoyment, one cannot make spiritual advancement. Karmis are generally engaged in sense gratification, and for this end, they are prepared to commit so many sinful activities. Animal sacrifice is but one such sinful activity. Consequently, by his mystic power, Narada Muni showed King Prachinibarhishat the dead animals which he had sacrificed. So the text again. Naru vacha bho bho prajapate rajan pashun pasha twaya dware samgyapitan jivasangan nirgrinena sahasrashaha. The great Saint Narada said, O king, O ruler of the citizens, my dear king, please see in the sky those animals which you have sacrificed without compassion, without mercy in the sacrificial arena. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Bhutte Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya De Satarne. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says that yesham antakatam papam jananam punyakaramanam te dvandva mohanir muktva vajante mam drida vrataha, that those who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful actions are completely eradicated and are free from the duality of delusion, can engage themselves in my service with determination. So here it says that there are different types of sinful activities. There are sinful activities in the mode of ignorance, sinful activities in the modes of passion, and sinful activities in the mode of goodness. But in any case, except for Krishna consciousness or from the absolute platform, everything is judged to be more or less a sinful activity. Sinful activity means it's being impelled by the modes of material nature in order to gratify the desires or the impulses arising from the senses and the mind. In any case, even if it's in the mode of goodness, one performs sacrificial offerings according to the rituals, but these are given in the Vedas not as an end in themselves, but as an encouragement to gradually regulate one's sinful activities and desires. In other words, for those who want to enjoy the material world, it is better to enjoy in a regulated way. Even for those in the mode of ignorance, who have no idea what is reality, who are engaged in all kinds of sinful activities, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, intoxication, it is better that those activities are regulated. Less of something bad is better than more of something bad. And by such regulation, one may gain a little intelligence, because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, any sinful desire in itself takes away one's intelligence, beginning with jayato visham pumsam. Just simply looking over the material world with the idea of trying to have a good time here. And after all, that's what our modern society is based on. Have a good time. Work like a dog and enjoy like a hog. And after you're done enjoying like a hog, sleep like a bear. And make sure your nails are sharp so you can defend yourself like a tiger. So have a good time. That's what everyone's advertising. We're in the Christmas spirit. everyone's supposed to be joyful. As they cut up the poor animal on the table, they're supposed to be very enthusiastic, ecstatic. I'll take its nose. So this is supposed to produce ecstasy in the hearts of the holiday seekers. They open up the presents or whatever else, take the alcohol. This is supposed to produce all varieties of rasa. Because everyone is basically looking for happiness. So looking at the material world with the idea of trying to enjoy here takes away our intelligence. What kind of intelligence? It's not that people are not expert at manipulating material energy, so-called, to fulfill their desires. But they've lost their intelligence because they don't know what's actually going to benefit themselves. Because, tevidu swarthakitim hi vishnu, darashaya ye bahir artamanina. They take something completely insignificant as so insignificant, and the most significant things they completely ignore. They don't know that Krishna is a reservoir of pleasure. Therefore, they take something completely insignificant, a little sex life for a few moments, a little intoxication, whatever. This is their happiness, and for that they're able to work, suffer, go through all kinds of sacrifice, austerity, and charity in order to enjoy something which is chapalasukha, insignificant. Similarly, if it's made very elaborate, these ritualistic ceremonies, but ultimately, they're just like the vulture going in the sky. The vulture in the sky may go very, very high, 2 miles up, but his business is to look on the ground to see if he can find a dead animal. Similarly, all these elaborate ceremonies, although they're better than no ceremony, no ritual, but ultimately the objective is the same. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Punak punas charvita charvananam. Simply chewing the chew. Therefore, as Prabhupada used to say, there is no past, present, and future in this world. It is the same thing going on again and again. As the sun rose in its orbit, or rose in the sky in the east millions of years ago, and as the sun will set eventually in the west. So similarly, the same things in this material world are going on again and again. Again, there is Kali Yuga, then there will be Satya Yuga, sometimes a little variety, first Warpa and then Treta Yuga, and then again Kali Yuga. There's summer, winter, there's summer, fall, winter, spring in different places. Similarly, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending are going on perpetually in this material world. 5 billion years ago, people were eating, they were sleeping, they were mating and defending. And today, people are eating, sleeping, mating, defending. You can read about it in the newspapers, how people are eating today, how people are sleeping today, and especially how they're having sex and defending themselves. And if you come back and read the newspapers 5 million years from now, you'll learn that people are eating, they're sleeping, they're mating and defending. It is simply going on again and again. Maybe it's a little bit of a different decoration. Like in Christmas, they have Christmas bells and trees and stockings. And so they eat under the Christmas stocking instead of without a Christmas stocking. But basically, it's the same activity. Similarly, these rituals, they're meant to provide better facility for eating, sleeping, mating, defending, with the hope that people will eventually realize that there is some higher purpose of existence, of utilizing one's energy, namely to become conscious of Krishna. After regulating one's activities, one derives or gains a little intelligence so that one is able to hear. And if one hears from the right source, one will gain some real knowledge, beginning with that we're not the body. So that's a big revelation. If I'm not this body, then why am I working so hard for the body? Why don't I do something for myself? We're so kind. We're so generous. We're such a nice servant that we even serve a useless body useless bodies again and again, which are torturing us, causing us all kinds of miseries. Simply repeating the prayer, you may embrace me, you may trample me, you may do anything for me, but you're always my worshipable body, unconditionally. And at the end, when we can't pay the rent, it kicks us out. And generally speaking, in Kali Yuga, because we haven't acquired any pious credits, and because we've acquired a lot of debits, therefore we have to take a lower species of life to work out our debits. Therefore, those who are fortunate, they'll realize that why waste our time in so many rituals simply to eat, sleep, mate, and defend? Because even without the rituals, the lower species of life are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The animals, neither they go to school, nor they learn how to perform rituals, nor are they great philosophers, but still the bird is getting his worm. Because it's arranged. As soon as we get a body, these things are arranged for all living entities according to their past activities. But of course, if one performs the rituals as outlined in the Vedas, there is some advantage in that one will acquire some faith. It is just like people nowadays, they have faith in science. Why? Because science is able to do something practical. You're able to go on the internet and see so many wonderful things going on around the world, how people are eating, sleeping, mating, defending, everywhere. Because it's boring, so they have to increase, you know, they have to show more and more bloody pictures or more explicit pictures because people are just used to everyone eating, sleeping, mating, defending, so they need something a little bit more extraordinary. But, now how extraordinary it becomes, actually, the purpose of the whole thing is to develop some faith. People have faith in the electronics, the whatever industries, technology, because it can do something practical. So previously, after great amounts of training, the students from the Gurukul actually could do something rather than write graffiti on the wall and play videos. Play video games. The Gurukul students actually had some talent. They were taught from the very beginning of life, Brahmachari, Gurukule, Vasandanta, Guru Arhitam. They were trained in tapasya, in austerity, how to chant the Vedic mantras in such a way as to produce effects. So when the Brahmin priest would chant the mantra, indeed, rain would come. When they chant the Vedic mantras, people, their physical bodies would be healed just by chanting the mantra. As Stephen Knapp, Srinandananda, writes in his book in South India, that when he was touring there, one of his friends cut his finger, bloody finger, and was bleeding all over. So one village lady came and took some mustard seed oil and some wrapped it up in a plant and chanted a mantra. And the cut closed, stopped bleeding. Then she chanted another mantra, and the wound healed up completely. So that's impressive. So that's expertise in chanting mantras. Similarly, nowadays they have a few people, if you get bitten by a snake, you go to the snake charmer, usually Muslims, but still they know the mantras, and indeed, people are saved from the poison of the snake by hearing them, by the snake mantra, by chanting the proper mantras. So it's not that mantras is simply some words in the air. They were actually, could generate effects within the world. When the priests at Prithu Maharaj's sacrifice saw that Indra was constantly stealing the horse from the sacrifice, then they chanted the mantra, let Indra become one of the offerings in the sacrifice. And indeed, Indra started to fall into the sacrifice. He was going to become an offering. Swaha. But luckily Indra was saved. That's how powerful the Brahmin priests were. And therefore they were respected, not only because they had a sacred thread, but because they were powerful, even more powerful than the Kshatriyas. Just by chanting mantras, they could wipe out all the Rakshasas. Although Vishvamrita wanted Lord Ram to come and protect his sacrificial offering, but he could have simply chanted a mantra and all the Rakshasas would have fallen into a sacrifice. But then he would have wasted that pious credit he had. But by the sacrificial rituals, they would offer animals. But why do they offer animals? Not for a barbecue after the sacrifice. Well, that was a great sacrifice. Let's have a barbecue with the animals. No, the idea was that they were so powerful, the persons who were performing the sacrifice, that before they'd offer the sacrifice, they'd check and see whether the priests were qualified. Because after all, they would have to throw in huge amounts of gold, that the sacrifice was sometimes made out of gold, the sacrificial altar. They'd offer jewels and ghee, and it was very expensive just to feed all the people who came. It was quite expensive. Plus all the presents, the jewelry, the silks, and everything else. So they didn't want a failure. They wanted to make sure that the priests were qualified. So first they'd sacrifice some animal. Well, first of all, the priest would have to ignite the fire with a mantra. There was no gasoline and matches. If he couldn't light the fire with mantras, then he wasn't even as good as a Kshatriya, because the Kshatriyas, they could produce fire weapons just by chanting mantras. So if the priest couldn't even light a little fire with a mantra, he was useless. So first they ignite the fire with a mantra, then they chant a mantra after the animal was sacrificed, and the animal would come back in a new body. They had to be at least that powerful, or else they wouldn't even start the sacrifice, because the sacrifice had to produce much more than bringing back one insignificant animal from death. They'd have to control the demigods, the rain, or the wealth, whatever else was available, or elevating people to the higher planets. It had to have such, the Vedic priests had to have such power. Then the sacrifice would be performed. And indeed, the person for whom the sacrifice was made would get the objective if the priest was qualified. And therefore, faith in the Vedic mantras was there. And after studying the Vedic literature, people would realize that there was something more than just getting some wealth or a nice wife or a child, that one could go to the heavenly planets and enjoy there for, they say, forever. And therefore, they want those sacrifices. They would invest more. Get out there, you know, withdraw from the bank their whole bank balance, their whole savings, and give it to the Brahmin priests and have a bigger sacrifice. And indeed, they wind up in Indraloka. And therefore, faith was developed. Wow, this is powerful. But no one is, they would read that even in Indraloka, Indra is suffering. He's fleeing from a woman after killing Vritrasura. He's fleeing from some woman with tuberculosis who's trying to get him. He's fleeing to a lotus flower. He has to stay there in the filament for thousands of years of the demigods. Even in the heavenly planets, there's problems. And then one has to die and take birth again. Get another job, 9 to 5. So in this way, after studying the Vedas, one realizes, wait a second, that there's so much